not fun for the people who are victims of this by any stretch, but it's been fun to research. And I mean, I also have a weird definition of fun as an accounting reporter.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the platform that brings financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams together to help you provide assured integrated reporting. It's one of a kind, just like you, dear listener. My name is Catherine Tsai. I'm an Off the Books co-host, professional asker of questions. My drink of choice is a venti soy chai, and I'm here with someone else who's also one of a kind, Steve Soder. Steve, would you like to introduce yourself?
That's very nice of you, Catherine. Hello, everyone. My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Daico aficionado. Looking forward to debiting a great conversation, and especially this one, which has been in the making, I feel like, for at least a year. So earlier this year, the SEC handed out a $12 million fine to an accounting firm that allegedly fell down on the job while reviewing more than 1,500 SEC filings. And this is on the heels of other SPAC-focused auditors who also got in trouble with the SEC, and in one case, the PCAOB. And we actually discussed this last season in episode 129 with Nicola White of Bloomberg, who is back with us today to talk about the latest auditor fallout with auditor B.F. Borgers.
And the trouble with this firm ended up causing a lot of problems for the firm's clients. The accounting firm BF Borgers also has been in the news because it was the auditor for Trump Media and Technology Group. So, Nicola, welcome back.
Thanks, Catherine. Thanks, Steve. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we are super excited to have you discussing this topic again. Before we pushed record, we were actually like, okay, when was the last time we had this discussion? But here we are again. And I'm wondering, maybe to get us started, can you get our audience up to speed on the whole auditor thing, including like the hullabaloo with the SPAC auditors and now this big settlement with BF Borgers?
Right. The regulators care about gatekeepers. They consider auditors to be gatekeepers of our public markets. They're the folks who vet company financials to make sure companies are doing what they're saying they're doing, that their numbers are transparent, and that they comply with auditing regulations. So in this case, we saw basically the SEC accused BF Borgers and the managing director, Ben Borgers, of a slew of violations of public company auditing standards. And that kind of tracks with the other two settlements that you referenced, Steve, Markham and Witham last year, on the SPAC boom and bust fallout. These were different. Of course, every case is different. But Borgers, this was not the case with Markham or Witham. But Borgers, the SEC chief, the enforcement director, called Borgers a sham audit mill, which is fightin' words.
Sick burn, bruh. What sort of clients did BF Borgers have?
So Borgers had a ton of clients, and that's sort of where it stands out compared to other firms of its size. It just had such a huge roster, but it's a small firm. Like, I just, before our call, I looked up Inside Public Accounting top 500 audit firms by revenue, and it doesn't make that list. So it's not a household name, but it just had tons and tons of clients. And according to Ideagen Audit Analytics, they put out a report every year, Who Audits the Public Companies? It was the number two auditor of over-the-counter companies. And just by volume of clients of SEC registrants, which is another way of saying public companies, it was the number eight auditor of public companies in 2023, which, that's a lot. Now, most of their public companies, about 80% of them, were over-the-counter. And then the rest, they traded over-the-counter, meaning they were too small or, you know, didn't meet the specific guidelines to be listed on NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange. But then, you know, 20% of its clients were NASDAQ, and most were NASDAQ, and there were like a small handful of New York Stock Exchange. So, you know, it did a lot of business, but it was a small firm. According to its latest PCAOB, there's a specific form that firms have to fill out saying, like, we had X number of clients, and we also in there, they say, you know, their personnel count. They had 10 CPAs, but a staff of 50 total. Now, we only know, like, the person who owned the firm, Ben Borgers, he signed, like, his name was on every single form AP. So we don't really have insight into, you know, who all worked at his Colorado, because his firm is based in Colorado.
Well, it's a hotbed of audit firms. I mean, obviously, you're going to set up in New York, Chicago, and Colorado.
Yeah, hotbed for SEC registrant clients.
So do we have a sense for what the fallout has been from this? I mean, it sounds like at a minimum, people are probably shopping for new auditors. But yeah, what's happened in the aftermath?
Yeah, it was pretty big fallout because, again, this is not, you know, it's not like GE or Apple is shopping for a new auditor. But there's a lot of small public companies that were like, oh, my gosh, I had no idea this was coming. And the timing of it for a lot of the smaller companies was that they hadn't done their 10Ks yet, or they, in some cases, they paid for their audit services, but they hadn't, they're like, oh my gosh, I paid for my 10K to get done. And now I not only don't have a 10K, but I don't have any, I paid all this money because like audits are not cheap. Right. So, a lot of companies were left in the lurch. I followed up, about a month after the everything went down to see who I was like, oh, I wonder who's going to pick up the new clients. That's sort of how I was wondering if maybe one firm would come out as the lead picker upper of ex-Borgers clients. And that really hasn't been the case. But what stood out to me was that as of a month after the fallout, almost 40% of Borgers old clients had not announced that they had a new auditor. So it's tough out there. I talked to some companies that said, we're having a hard time finding an auditor that we can afford. And then, and this also makes sense on a lot of levels, there were companies that said, we had auditors kind of leery about taking us up because we are tainted. You know, we didn't do anything wrong, but we're tainted by association by an audit firm that our regulator, our chief, you know, the chief Wall Street watchdog, called a sham audit mill. So auditors are not risk takers, right? You know, they're not going to be like, I'll just take any old client. They shouldn't be anyway. Like, you need to do a background check. You have to do your due diligence. And so it's tough out there.
Especially given what we talked about last time, I'm sure some audit firms don't want to take on more clients than they can actually handle either.
Exactly. So a lot of small audit firms don't have a lot of people. And even, like, let's say you're an audit firm that had 10 public company registrants, which is not unusual for some PCAOB registered firms. You're going to take on 10 more, double your workload. You know, and then how many more CPAs are you going to hire? And you may have heard there's a CPA shortage out there. So like all of these things, they're all connected. So, you know, I talk to people who are in this audit world and, you know, some firms are not only are they leery, nervous about taking on new clients, but they're like, if I take on a bunch of new clients, that's just going to put me at risk of more scrutiny from the regulator. Like, PCAOB is going to be like, let's, you know, look under the hood a lot more because, A, you've added more clients and you've potentially added more risky clients.
I saw that SEC did grant companies extra time to file their report so that they could find a new auditor, but how many companies missed SEC filing deadlines because of this search?
Yeah, so many of them. you're not going to be able to be like, hire a new auditor, and then that auditor is going to be like, great. Just copy. I mean, this is how auditors get in trouble. You can't copy and paste what the last person did. So pretty much, all of them were late. So, yeah.
Well, and to that point, I mean, it does take a long time. You may need audit committee approval if you've got, you know, kind of a fully functioning board. I mean, ideally, if you're a public company, of course you would. But then there's a whole risk assessment process. I mean, even just engaging a new client, I mean, that is not a trivial, straightforward thing. It's not like you can show up, okay, you know, we got these 60 extra days from the SEC. All right, hey, we're good to go. On that point, actually, about these auditors being leery. So, but let's say, you know, an auditor has done the due diligence or whatever, they've picked up one of these clients. Do we have any indication yet of whether or not there have been newly uncovered deficiencies, errors, restatements, that kind of thing? Because as you said, I would imagine that these new auditors would be presumably looking very, very closely at these firms. I mean, you know, I've got to imagine that, like, this isn't just any run-of-the-mill audit. This is going to obviously, like, require a little more work.
Exactly. So one thing that's kind of surprising is that I was expecting kind of a slew of restatements shortly after, like, the dust settled and companies got new auditors. And I just haven't seen a slew of them. I've seen a handful. And I think at this point, maybe it's a little bit too early to tell. But it is important to note that the SEC, in addition to the SEC order sanctioning the firm, there was also special guidance put out by the SEC's Division of Corporation Finance. And like Catherine, you said, they gave companies extra time to file. They also did not outright say you must restate or you must, you know, they said you may have to. So, you know, there's judgment in all of these things. I'm wondering if maybe like some companies and firms are just taking their time to figure out exactly where to go from here. I don't know.
Well, and I certainly don't have the exposure to this compared to you do, Nicola, just based on the amount of research that you've done. But, you know, when you're presenting a 10-K, you've obviously got like your current period, but then you have historical periods presented as well. Again, not a trivial thing to maybe have to go back, because I do think that is one of the things that the SEC mentioned specifically. Hey, you may not be able to rely on these prior periods. And if I'm one of those auditors, well, I can't just have an opinion. It would be weird to have an opinion, obviously, like just for one current period and then like ignore the rest. Like it doesn't really work that way. So now you're not just talking about like one, you know, like going in the current year. Well, now you may have to go back. And now you're into the kind of work that you'd end up doing like as a newly public company when you were like very first presenting financial statements. I mean, in many ways, you really would be like starting all over again. And now you're not talking like weeks or months, but I mean, in some cases, you know, that could be a year or more, particularly for smaller firms, can't afford a lot of like extra supplemental headcount, that kind of thing, both on the client side and on the auditor side. What a mess.
It is. It really is a mess. And the other thing to note, there was some nuance in the staff statement from Corp Fin. You know, they said that you may not have to restate your past financials. But like if you were about to do a public offering or like I talked to a company that was going to uplist from the OTC to NASDAQ and they were so close to getting there and then their auditor, you know, blew up. So they told me that they expected to have to restate everything just because they were going through the registration process with the SEC and everything was under a microscope. So there's different circumstances. But yeah, it's 100% a big mess.
Who is picking up a lot of these BF Borgers clients?
So it's a little bit all over the map. It's really not one company. I thought maybe there'd be like, oh, another company, another firm out there that
another likes sham audit mill. You can go ahead and say it. It's okay.
I will absolutely not say that. Well, here's something that was kind of interesting that I had not anticipated. When I was looking at who were like the top auditors of OTC companies, according to IDGen Audit Analytics, the number one auditor of OTC companies is Deloitte. So household name, big four, lots of staff. Number of ex-Borgers clients that Deloitte picked up, zero. They're not going to pick up these clients, right? First of all, I doubt that most of these clients would be able to afford Deloitte fees. Also, potentially Deloitte is a firm that's, you know, not going to want to take on more risk than they need to. What we have seen is that it has been quite small auditors that are taking on exporters clients. There's a few shops in on the West Coast that have taken up. Really, it's been more, it's been like each one has picked up a max of a dozen a piece. And then the rest, it's like one-offs here and there. Now, another interesting thing is that more than a handful have gone to two firms based in Nigeria. So I think that that would, might be something that the PCAOB could take a close look at, just given, while, yes, we're in the era of, you know, we don't necessarily need auditors to go physically inspect piles of inventory because maybe the company doesn't have a warehouse full of inventory. It's like an, you know, intellectual property heavy business. Having an offshore auditor does, you know, it could potentially raise some red flags.
And it would be interesting to dig into the characteristics of those clients, because I can picture that a lot of these companies probably are akin to a shell company, very little activity. We had talked prior to starting the recording, like, hey, maybe your biggest asset actually is that you're a public company, you know, listed on OTC exchange, and that's it. But there comes a point where, like, you kind of need this like minimum critical mass of audit hours in order for all of the due diligence and all the engagement process and the risk assessments to kind of make sense. And so maybe you are like an offshore auditor and say, hey, you know what, we can do this really quickly, efficiently, but we're actually looking for what's akin to a shell company. And then we've got a somewhat templated process that allows us to do that really efficiently. And then, you know, maybe in that case, that makes sense where
that's a good somebody, point, Steve. Yeah.
Yeah. Like somebody in the States, like even like a smaller regional auditor, maybe like, hey, you know what, like this is just not even worth it for us to dig into that. I don't know. Really, really interesting. I mean, all this is this, just so interesting.
It has been, I've gone down so many rabbit holes on this. And it's been really, really interesting just to, you know, I've talked to so many interesting people and companies that I never thought, like, I don't know, it's been fun. Not fun for the people who are victims of this by any stretch, but it's been fun to research. And I mean, I also have a weird definition of fun as an accounting reporter.
Today's episode is brought to you by Workeep. Like most of us, I like to pretend to eat healthy, or at least not exclusively eat Dino Chicken Nuggies. And that's why I'm a big fan of salad kits. Yes, this is an ad for Workiva, but it is also an ad for salad kits. No longer will I buy a bunch of kale or arugula and sadly watch it turn to green smelly soup in the bottom drawer of my fridge after making a salad for one. No longer will I have to think of crouton pairings. And no longer will I have 14 half-used bottles of dressing in the fridge, even though I know I only like balsamic vinaigrette. I have found culinary convenience in salad kits. With the wonderfully paired dried cranberries, carrot strips, goat cheese, and strawberry vinaigrette, you will find financial reporting, ESG, and audit risk convenience in Workiva. Yes, Workiva. And you've got your SEC reporting, ESG reports, 10K, sustainability reports, SOX compliance, risk assessments, and so much more, dear listener, on the same platform. You've got just the right ingredients, right when and where you need them. Toss out that old technology your team never liked to use and try Workiva. Tailor-made to your processes, without all the extraneous junk that just gums up the works. Plus, it's fat-free and low in sodium.
One rabbit hole that we tried to jump down was getting a hold of BF Borgers and Mr. Borgers just to ask about this whole thing. But I'm wondering if you were able to contact him and also...
Yeah, so 0% luck. Okay. On that. We had written a story with my colleagues at Bloomberg News on the fact, this is before the SEC enforcement action came out, because its biggest client by far, based on market cap, was Trump Media. And, you know, we were like, wow, Trump Media picked this auditor that's not a household name. And it's had, it's fair, it had 100% deficiency rate from the PCAOB 2 years in a row, which for accounting enthusiasts, they know that that's not a good look. And then it has a roster of very, very small clients, or largely small clients, which sounds like an oxymoron. But, you know, what's like a, I can't remember what the market cap of Trump Technology was when it IPO'd, but it was a lot compared to the other clients, like, why did it pick? Isn't it interesting that they picked this auditor? It, like, was sanctioned in Canada. Borgers was sanctioned in Canada. The Canadian accountancy board there said, please stop doing audits in this country for a certain amount of time because we don't like what we've seen. There were two other PCAOB violations, like some fines for former partners at the firm. And then, the 100% deficiency rate. So we had tried to contact him then. That was about, I can't remember, a few weeks, a month before everything went down. And I called so many times, emailed, please, like, we want to get your, because we can't just, like, we want to write a story that's, like, give a chance to, you know, tell your side of the story. And is everything, you know, like, I don't care how you get back to me, carrier pigeon, like, just please, we want to hear your, and I actually put that in a voicemail, just like, I'll take any way that you can get back to me. And probably at that point, he knew that the SEC sanctions were coming out. So why would you talk to a reporter? Like, there's just no benefit to doing that.
Well, and he personally has been sanctioned and banned, right, from pretty much practice altogether, in addition to the firm, for public companies at least. Did I get that right?
That's right. So a lot of times we see sanctions from the SEC for auditors or the PCAOB. They'll say, like, you're banned. They don't use the word banned, but, like, it essentially means you can't do any public company work for a year or X number of years or until you do XYZ. And he was straight up forbidden from doing public company work forever. But that doesn't preclude you from, you know, a tax audit, private company, you know, audits. So that's a question that I'm wondering about, like, you know, what happens next, if there is a next?
Yeah. What do you think happened that led to these allegations?
I can jump in. It actually gets back to my earlier point. Well, I don't think any auditor would raise their hand and say, hey, you know what? I've got a streamlined, templatized process, and we are so good at auditing this kind of company, we can make it so much less expensive, so streamlined. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's how they started out, legitimately and actually probably in the best interest of both them and the clients, and probably were able to produce good enough audits. The problem is you start to stretch that where companies grow and, you know, you have this relationship. And if you're BF Borgers, obviously you don't want to give up those clients as they grow because that means more complexity, more audit hours. But then at some point you're like in direct opposition of new and growing and different things, direct opposition to that model that you had, which is super concise, streamlined. But the train has left the station, as it were, and, like, revenue is growing and we're winning all these new clients. And, you know, I mean, at some point it just inevitably is just going to completely collapse. And I think to me that was bound to happen. I mean, almost inevitably going to happen the minute that they got outside that just, like, super tight, really concise model that, at least up to that point, probably worked well both for them and their clients.
What are you watching for next in this case? Anything?
I talked to some folks who were like, are there going to be fallout from other regulators or federal authorities? That could be interesting. And then what also, and this is like potentially kind of more inside baseball / nerdy, what about the firms that took on the clients? Like, are they going to have increased regulator scrutiny? And then the other thing too is like, like I mentioned, almost 40% of the old clients just didn't pick up. As of the time that I wrote that story, they hadn't picked up new auditors. And you need an auditor to be a publicly traded company. So, like, are those companies just going to fall off? You know, are we going to have fewer publicly traded? And again, that's not, like, such a huge market share. But, like, it's an interesting impact to the market that some companies are just like, you know what, it's not worth it. And there were a couple of companies that, well, more than a couple, there were just, like, one company put out a statement that just said they didn't tie it. They were a Borgers client. They didn't tie it to Borgers, but they were just like, it is way too expensive for us to be an SEC registrant at this point. So, you know, we're just going to call it. And this was a company, it was an operating company. It wasn't a shell company. It had, you know, a website with like things you could order, like a real, you know, operate, like what we'd think of as an operating company. So it wasn't just we're hanging out waiting to find a merger or what have you. So that's, you know, being a public company is a way to fundraise. So, gives you access to different investors, and maybe that's a bit of a bummer.
The audit industry in general has just been like just really beat down, right? I mean, it's been like
a rough
couple of years. And my first reaction when I saw this story as well as the SPAC audit stuff, it's like, okay, you know what? This is just one more brick in that wall, right? Just one more piling on. But then I actually thought to myself, but you know what, though? If you're certainly the big four, but I'd say even, you know, the larger regional firms, I actually wonder if in some ways this maybe shines a little bit of light on the fact that says, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're big. And as a firm, I mean, we're not as perfect as we probably ought to be. But this is actually why, I mean, this is a perfect example of why you need big, responsible firms that have large infrastructures, a lot of client service professionals that can actually do auditing the right way. And you know, I go back to Deloitte. Deloitte didn't pick up one of them. They wouldn't want to touch that with like a 10-foot pole and say, you know why? Because we're Deloitte. And when you say that you're audited by Deloitte, as well as the other big firms, that actually means something. I wonder if maybe this helped to at least distinguish the pack, as it were, of auditors just in the midst of, you know, what's really been a rough couple of years.
Sure, but we definitely need to know that the Big Four has had its share of scandals as well. So just because you're audited by a Big Four doesn't mean you can't commit shenanigans.
Well, that's them like, well, hey, but at least we're not being at Borgers, right? I mean, how bad was that?
Yeah, well, like the SEC doesn't call it a, you know, sham audit mail, and, you know, they didn't copy and paste work papers. As far as we know.
as far as we know.
Yeah.
Well.
You know what? I was actually.
Yeah, please.
Going back to the question about, like, what happened? I talked to so many Borders clients. And even after, like, one of my colleagues and I was like, all right, we're just going to call every number we can find on these to just see what the fallout is. And, you know, not everybody picked up. A lot of numbers were disconnected. Like, you know, but we tried. I did talk to some folks who had been longtime Borgers clients, and I was like, tell me, you know, because I was expecting them to be like, and then they ignored us, or, you know, like, and then we just started noticing that our 10-Ks were identical. Like, I was just, I didn't know what to expect. And, you know, some of them said, like, Ben himself would, like, be like, wait a minute, tell me about that journal entry. Like, he did ask questions. But then there were others that were like, you know, it took a long time to respond to email. So, like, it was kind of like you got one image of an auditor that was really digging under the hood. And then you got another, you know, and these are all anecdotes, of course. And also people you're talking to are biased because they just got jilted, essentially. But it was interesting to hear the different perspectives.
Mr. Borgers, if you're listening. Off the books at workiva.com. We'd love to have you on the show.
We would love to talk to you about this. Fair and unbiased. We're just looking for the story. We're just looking for reaction. That's all. Well, speaking of reactions and potentially rabbit holes, Nicola, you mentioned that earlier to close us out. And by the way, it's been a phenomenal discussion. If you had to have one aspect of your life be subject to an audit, what would that be? I can go first because I realize it's a little bit of a different question. As an accountant, I like to track and organize things. My family would tell you how painful it must be to live in the same house as me. I do try to track my calories and what I eat religiously, but I would love for an auditor to tell me, like, well, I don't know, Steve, you know, you added in a couple of blueberries to that smoothie, but you didn't put that on the app. I don't, you know, what are we talking like, you know,
but 500 calories a day? Is that material, Steve?
Well, and an auditor should be able to, they should be able to assess and tell me that. I don't know, that's what I would have tracked. But Nicola, how about you?
Well, my kids would say corny jokes. Yeah, they say I make a lot of dad jokes, even though I'm a mom. So I would like to prove them wrong.
I love that. Catherine, how about you?
I should probably do an audit of how many books I read to trashy TV shows I watch, something like that. It'd probably be shocking to me. Maybe I don't want to know that.
Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. Well, when our audience wants to know something, especially in this arena, Nicola White, you are one of a kind from Bloomberg. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, it is always such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, guys.
Well, thank you to Nicola White for a fantastic discussion and one that we're going to keep an eye on. In fact, Catherine, we've actually had some updates since we recorded with Nicola, haven't we?
That's right, and Nicola has written about it too. For one thing, regulators in Colorado are taking steps to revoke the CPA license of the firm's founder. And separately, a company that was a client of BF Borgers filed an 8K saying that they got a new auditor, and the new auditor found that investors probably shouldn't rely on some of the previously issued financial statements that had been audited by BF Borgers. So a couple interesting developments there. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think just like we talked about with Nicola, when you're a new auditor and you're coming in on the heels of an incumbent that maybe had some issues, as BF Borgers certainly has, I can imagine they were kicking the tires pretty heavy on those clients. And clearly, at least we've seen one case where that resulted in, I think, some pretty serious outcomes. So it'll be interesting to see if there are more.
Yep, we'll be watching Nicola's articles. But thanks again to Nicola White, and thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Catherine Tsai, you heard Steve Soder, and this has been Off the Books presented by Workiva. We'll be going on a brief hiatus until the end of September, but until then, catch up on our back catalog. Please subscribe and follow us so you can catch all of our upcoming episodes when we're back.
Yeah, that's right. And if you like Off the Books, as always, please leave a review, tell your buddies if you like the show. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to drop us a note in the comments, or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.